What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Sava FC. This is Antonio, and I'm here with Anthony. Today's agenda, we're going to be talking about who we believe should win the Ballon d'Or. And then last week, we gave our predictions for the Serie A. So this week, we're giving our predictions for the top five clubs in the English Premier League and who we think is going to win it overall. But before we get into any of that, please make sure that you subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening to us on. We'd greatly appreciate it, and it'd help us out a lot.
And don't forget to leave a review.
Absolutely. So how are you doing today, Ant?
I'm doing good. Nice day today.
Beautiful.
Can't complain. Soccer's right around the corner.
I know. I'm so excited.
Professionally, recreationally, all above.
Well, that's right. This you're getting back into playing soccer pretty soon.
I am. It's the first time in like 6 years. So officially, I'm coming out of retirement.
Coming out of retirement.
Yeah, I felt like I have some gas left in the tank, so I figured let me try it again.
Listen, more power to you. I hope to be playing soccer when I'm your age too.
Hopefully my knees won't fall off.
Well, listen, injuries happen, so.
Anyways.
Before we begin, I do want to mention one thing. Were you able to catch Thursday's games
for the
Gold Cup?
I watched USA versus Qatar, yeah.
You didn't watch the Mexico-Canada game?
I didn't. To be honest with you, I just didn't have time. I ran out of time.
Fair enough. Let's start with USA-Qatar. Just touch on it real quick. USA has fully embraced the motto, survive in advance.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Qatar coming in this had just won an Asian tournament. Right. They had the most goals scored in the Gold Cup, but they also had the most goals scored against.
Here's my thing with Qatar. Since the beginning of the World Cup, they've never qualified. They've never been a team that's amounted to anything.
Right.
Nobody even knew of them.
Right.
Okay. All these players play in the Qatar League. Can you name one of them?
No.
Because I can't.
I couldn't even probably pronounce them. And then, you know, Josh will get mad because I butchered their name.
Right. So one of our listeners, Josh, also my cousin, he wanted us to mention Qatar. But I'm sorry, Josh, I don't think you're going to like what we have to say about them. This is a fluke of a team. This is FIFA's way of pushing a team into glory, I guess you could say, and having it make sense as to why we're having the next World Cup in Qatar. That's right. The only way I could see it.
But, you know, since 2018, FIFA has put in place that whenever there's a Gold Cup, they bring in the team that is hosting or a different team that's not part of the...
I don't care about that. Listen, I'm okay with that. You want to invite Qatar to come play? That's fine. Invite Qatar to come play. You could invite anybody in the world for all I care. My problem is with people who think Qatar is a serious team. It's not.
It's not. And I'll tell you why, and you can tell me what your opinion is. So Qatar coming in has the most goals scored. They look like a solid team, right? They come and play the United States men's national team, which they're a solid group of kids, right? But they are missing all their top players. You have a bunch of kids out there.
We're fielding our B team.
Right.
Could even make a debate for it being our C team.
Right.
Okay.
And if Qatar is scoring all these goals, how are we holding them up to zero goals?
Well, this is what I was saying before about USA's new motto being survive in advance. Because this USA team, slightly, and not saying they're exactly the same, but reminds me of an old school Italian national team, okay? You play strong, you play physical, you don't get scored on, and then you find your opportunity to chip one in the back of the net to be able to get, you know, just win 1-0. Listen, the group stages, you play against some teams that...
Yeah.
They're in this tournament because they qualify in the CONCACAF.
And they're part of the CONCACAF, right.
Right, but worldwide, they're nothing crazy.
No, I mean, joking around, I said our U13 team could probably beat some of these teams.
Right. Granted, like you said, it's joking around, though, because they are professionals.
Absolutely.
One way or another. What bothers me is a lot of these teams, if you look at their FIFA rankings, they're not even ranked in the top 50.
Right.
So when you see a Qatar beat one of these teams, you know, 3-0, 4-0, you get all excited. And it's like, you're forgetting that Qatar does have some decent players. Not saying they're the best, right, but they're also not the worst.
No.
They could definitely hang up there with, you know, teams that are in between the 30 to 50 range ranked.
Right.
Okay. That's fine. I think when they beat Japan, Japan was ranked 28th.
Right.
So.
And Japan has some players.
Yeah, yeah. No, Japan's a good team.
Compared to Qatar, they
have some players. Listen, when you watch Japan play internationally, they're good.
Yeah, they hold their own.
So, okay, you beat Japan in the finals for the Asian Cup. This is different, though, now. You went up against USA. Like I said, we're fielding our B team, C team, whatever it is. This is the first time, to my knowledge at least, listeners, if I'm wrong, please feel free to let me know. But this is the first time that you're playing against a team ranked in the top 20.
Right.
Not only are you playing against a team ranked in the top 20, you're also playing against their B team.
Right.
And you blow it.
But to your point that you had mentioned before, Qatar's beaten these teams 3-0, 4-0, or whatever the case may be. United States beat Martinique 6-0. You know what my takeaway from that was?
What?
It's Martinique.
Right.
And I wasn't focusing on them. I knew they were going to win that game, whether it's 1-0 or 6-0. I was watching them, and I'm trying to see how they're playing out of the back. I'm trying to see how crisp their passes were. That's what you take away from games like that, where some people are like, oh, Qatar's a dangerous team, because they're looking at that final score.
They're not looking at the whole game. Listen, Qatar cracked under pressure. They had an opportunity to take the lead with a penalty kick, and the penalty kick was there. You know,
Let's be honest. Those kids for the U.S. team, they played it well. They played that mind game well by, you know, holding the ref up, by doing this, by doing that.
They added
that
the pressure.
Fantastic.
They added the pressure. Right.
That was fantastic.
And what happened? Qatar missed it.
Yeah.
You had a golden opportunity there, literally brought to you on a platter, and you couldn't capitalize.
Right.
And also, shout out to Turner. USA.
Yeah.
Did you know he played collegiate soccer in Connecticut?
Yeah, Fairfield U.
Yep, Fairfield U.
Yeah.
So,
but you saw what he did, right? He took a page out of Chiellini's book.
What did he do?
So once the referee walked away, Turner walks up to the PK kicker.
And he's stomping.
And he shook his hand and wished him good luck. And then walked back. And then the kid was probably like, well, why is he shaking my hand? Why is he wishing me good luck?
Listen, when it comes to the penalty kick, there's so much pressure. I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine that I play with, and he played semi-pro, not professional. But he said, he goes, when you line up to take a PK in those type of scenarios, he goes, the pressure builds up.
And
he goes, most people watching don't realize it, but it's a hectic moment.
Absolutely.
And that's what it was for the player. I don't know his name, unfortunately, but the player who stepped up for guitar. Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. You're on the big stage.
Yeah, you have the world is watching you. Your team is watching you. Your team is expecting you to put this easy shot into the back of the net.
Right.
And, you know, things happen.
Listen, he sent it high. And that's the other thing that's got to stop with these penalty kicks. Stop with the stutter steps and the faking out. Just line up and shoot.
There's only one guy that I've seen that could successfully do it. And that's Jorginho.
I already knew you were going to say him. But either way, good showing from the USA.
Yeah.
Okay. Zardes, I don't understand why he's on the bench. Berhalter, you got to start starting him.
Right.
Okay. And then, I don't know if you noticed this, but when he put Gioacchini in finally, okay, he's half Italian, plays for the USA men's national team. He plays in League 2 in France.
Okay.
This guy should not be on the bench. This guy should be starting. So, Berhalter seems like he may have a preference of MLS players, and that bothers me.
Right.
Because for the first time
What's he going to do when it's time to put the other guys on?
This is what I'm saying. For the first time
in a Pulisic because he plays for
Chelsea? No, obviously he's not going to do that, but Berhalter's trying to coach his way right now.
Right.
But what bothers me is that in a year from now, our starting 11, almost all of them, depending on who ends up playing goalkeeper, but if Zach Steffen ends up being the starting goalkeeper, none of them will be playing in the MLS. Our entire starting 11.
Yeah, they'll all be European players. Oh,
absolutely.
If they think they're going to have any shot to get far in the World Cup, they need to have the experience of international play.
100%. Gioacchini came in. And right away, so same thing. And with my buddy who played some semi-pro, Gioacchini makes a move, sends the cross around the box. I think it's what ended up leading to Zardes' goal. And he looks at me and he goes, that's not an MLS move. He goes, that's a European move. So that's when we looked it up real quick and we found out, oh my God, you're right. He plays in France. So this is the stuff that boggles my mind. Berhalter may be a good coach, but I'm not sure if I like the way he's managing the team. We'll see what happens against Mexico in the final. And then last thing I want to say, I know you didn't watch it, but Mexico-Canada was a spectacular game to watch. The drama that was in it was unbelievable. 1-1. All the way up until the last few minutes. Then Mexico slips one in. They ended up playing 15 minutes of overtime. That's how long it ended up going.
Why? From injury to
injury, foul calls, wasting time. There was a dilemma at one point with two balls on the field. The Canadian player took a ball, threw it out. The Mexico player ran behind, threw another ball out. So it caused more of a delay. They ended up in a fight. It was insane.
Oh, wow. I have a recorder. I'll have to go back and watch it.
You got
to
watch the highlights. I recommend anybody go watch both games, USA Qatar and Mexico versus Canada. I really enjoyed both of them. And after coming from watching the Euro, this was nice. I'll put it like that, because I have high expectations now when, you know, watching other countries play. And I was like, wow, I really, really enjoyed watching these four teams play.
What do you think the outcome is going to be tomorrow?
I think the outcome of Mexico-USA is going to be 2-0 Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, not with this team. The United States beat them the last time they met, but they had their top guys.
But listen, Mexico is missing some of their players too because of the Olympics. So, and don't forget, Lozano ended up getting hurt, who was a big piece of that team. Another one coming from Europe. Anything can happen.
Right.
I just don't know if that survive and advance mentality that the USA has is going to work against Mexico.
Well, we'll see.
It'll be an exciting game either way. I recommend everybody go watch it. It's going to be good. I mean, this is the final we all expected to see anyway.
Yeah, it was just a matter of, you know, how they got there.
I saw one person on Twitter say, I'd rather USA lose to Mexico 4-0
than lose to Qatar.
1-0.
Right. No, absolutely. Right. I agree.
All right. But moving on from the Gold Cup, since it wasn't in the schedule, let's move on to the Ballon d'Or candidates.
Let's do it. Now, just so everybody knows, the actual award isn't given out until, I believe, December.
Correct.
So these candidates are not set in stone, but they're pretty much set in stone.
Well, I mean, the 2020-2021 season already ended. We had all the international cups happen, currently going on, some of them. But for the most part, we have an idea of who the candidates are going to be. So these are our really early predictions of who we think is going to win it. So, Ant, I found a list of the 10 players right now who are most favored to win it. I'm going to read it off. And then if you have anybody different that you want to add to it, go ahead.
Yeah, because I have 10 myself.
But so for everybody listening, if you don't know what the Ballon d'Or is, it's basically the award that honors the male player who's performed the best over the last year. This year, we had a lot of international competitions that were pushed back because of COVID.
Right.
It was an interesting Champions League season, to say the least.
Yeah.
A lot of shakeup in many leagues because the favorites didn't win the league.
Right.
So the Ballon d'Or candidates, like we were saying, obviously this honors the male who performed the best, but I'm a pure believer of if you're performing the best, that means you're helping your team win.
Exactly.
So my candidates, I base them off of not only individual performance, but because of your individual performance, how did your team do? You know, I don't care if you're scoring 60 goals a season, but playing for a team that's finishing in 10th place.
Right.
That means you didn't help your team succeed. Right. And I know it's a weird way.
And I get it, because there are some guys that make the list because of who they are.
Correct.
You know.
But their teams ended up doing nothing this season. So, all right, let's break down to the list. So, this list has the favorite to win it, Lionel Messi, which I will get into him afterwards. Tied for second, they have Cristiano Ronaldo and Robert Lewandowski.
Cristiano Ronaldo for second.
Correct.
Okay.
They're both tied at second, Lewandowski and Ronaldo. At third, they have N'Golo Kanté, which I could see, you know, Champions League winner with Chelsea.
He was third last year.
We'll see what happens. Fourth, they have Harry Kane, who we've talked about on this podcast before. I think he's a phenomenal player.
He is. You know, it's funny. He didn't even make my top 10.
Wow. Fifth, Raheem Sterling. Sixth, Jorginho. Seventh, Kevin De Bruyne. Eighth, Neymar. Ninth, Chito Immobile. So like I said, I had 10 players, but they had two of them tied for second.
Right.
I'm going to tell you right now, based off of this list, I'm not considering Immobile. I'm not considering Neymar. I'm not considering Sterling or Kane or Cristiano Ronaldo. So, but that's me personally. So what do you got?
Here's my top 10. I'll start from 10, work my way down to the bottom.
Okay.
I got Chiesa at number 10.
Okay.
14 goals, 5 assists, won the Euro Cup, Coppa Italia, and Supercoppa Italiana. Then I got Haaland with 25 goals, 9 assists, and won the DFB Pokal. Number 8.
Borussia, yep.
Number 8, I got Cristiano Ronaldo. 27 goals, 4 assists, won Coppa Italia, Supercoppa Italiana, That's the same team that Gez is on. Going down to seventh, I got the Bruyne. 10 goals, 10 assists, won the Premier League and the Carabao Cup. Then six, I have Mbappe with 29 goals, 7 assists, won the Coupe de France and the Trophy des Champions. Five, I have Lukaku. Didn't win anything because he was with Inter.
What are you talking about? He won the Scudetto.
Oh, the Scudetto, that's right.
That's the biggest thing after Juve ran it for 9 years.
You're right. But if Belgium could run the table in October, he might jump from five to maybe three.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Then four, I got Conte. And then three, I have Jorginho, where I think your list had him at like six.
Well, my list was, well, yeah, but that's not my personal preference. Right, right. That's just a list that I found.
And this is the problem I have with two, is it's Robert Lewandowski. Personally, I think he should be number one, 41 goals, 4 assists, won the Bundesliga. He had the best individual season in all of Europe, okay? And number one is Messi. I think the reason why Messi's going to win it is because it's the first time he's won a trophy with Argentina.
Right.
You know, and listen, he deserves it.
Which?
It'll be a seventh time.
It's wrong for me. And this is now where I'm going to get into my personal preferences. And like I said, I'm bigger on team play than I am.
Right.
And granted, I might be looking at the award the wrong way. You know, people might be saying, Tone, you're crazy. It's about the best male player, so it doesn't matter what their team did.
Because
to me, it does.
It's almost like an MVP award, right? You have to be able to help your team win something. You know, I think you got...
And I want to address one thing. I really don't care if you win a domestic cup. Like you were saying, Chiesa won the Coppa Italia, right? Him and Ronaldo, and then they won the Super Cup?
Yeah.
I don't care about that when you ended up losing the Scudetto after a 9-year run.
Right.
So, and in Champions League, you didn't end up doing anything.
Right.
So that stuff bothered. Like, I can't consider those guys as the top players.
10-8.
Right. Granted, I love Chiesa. I don't want anybody to think that I don't.
Right.
Chiesa is the future of Italy. And I love the kid.
I mentioned that on the last show. I think Chiesa is going to get player of the year for Serie A this year.
Probably, but it's not Ballon d'Or time for him yet.
No, not yet. He's still young. He's a baby still.
I'm going to touch on Kevin De Bruyne. The reason I'm touching on Kevin De Bruyne is Man City won the Premier League, okay? They made it to the finals of the Champions League. And he played for the number one ranked team, international team in the world, which is Belgium.
Right.
In the Euro Cup. So here's the reason Kevin De Bruyne isn't going to get it. He's not going to get it because he missed a lot of games due to injury this year.
That's right.
He ended up missing, it was somewhere around, I think it was like 13 games in the Premier League. In those 25 appearances he did have, he ended up scoring 6 goals, had 12 assists. He was a part of 17 wins and 3 losses. That's huge for the amount of games that he did play.
Right.
All right? As a midfielder. Man City did find a way, though, to win 10 games without him. So, looking at it overall, is he needed on that team for sure? Or can Man City just do plug and play? You know, if De Bruyne's out or if we have to ever get rid of De Bruyne, can we put somebody else in his position? And that's what I take into consideration too. I still think he's one of the top midfielders in the world. I think Man City was deploying him as striker at one point as well. So he's necessary.
Now, did they deploy him as striker because of injury?
No, I think they were just trying different things. Listen, man, it's Pep. Pep Guardiola, sure. He's one of the best but craziest coaches in the world.
Right.
Some of his tactics and things that he tries, I mean, it works though.
Yeah.
You know? So that was interesting for me to see. Due to his injuries, he ended up coming back in the second leg of the round of 16 in Champions League. And he ended up scoring. And then he ended up playing the rest of the, knockout games. And he ended up scoring 2 more goals en route to the finals. So he played his part when it came to Champions League.
Right.
Good player. My issue with De Bruyne, when it came time for the finals, he didn't score. If you're that big of a player, you know, and you're going to get an award like this, you step up when your team needs you the most.
Or make sure you are part of the play that scores the goal.
Correct. So he didn't score, but you still can't take away from him what he did to get there.
Right.
We go to the Euros. He had 1 goal and 2 assists in the Euros. He also got injured at one point. I believe he was injured early on. He got like an elbow to the face or something like that. So he had to sit out one of the group stage games. Ended up coming back right after, though. He played against Portugal, but he didn't score against Portugal. I actually believe against Portugal, he came out in like the 48th minute or something because we were contemplating whether he was going to play or not against Italy.
That's right.
Remember? So when Belgium went up against Italy, once again, he didn't score. So these are the things that I'm looking at.
And I don't think you're the only one that's looking at that. I think they're taking these things into consideration, too, when they pick their winner.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, it's a bunch of sports journalists, sports writers, coaches, former players that are voting on this stuff.
So where do you don't – if it was your list and you were doing it, you don't even put them on that?
No, listen, I would put him on that list.
You wouldn't put him at top five.
Yeah, I did, actually.
Oh, you did?
So out of those 10 players that I mentioned, I put De Bruyne as my fifth. Okay. And here's the other thing that kind of seals the deal for me. When it came to the Euro tournament, he finished as the 70th overall player. Way too low for a player of his caliber. You know what I mean?
Where did Lukaku finish on that list?
To be honest, I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I believe he was somewhere in the top 10, though.
Okay.
Don't quote me. Could be wrong. We'll look up after the break. Put him at fifth. I think that's fair for De Bruyne. He's not going to win it. He could. Long shot to win it, though. But that's just how I see it. Moving on. Next player I got. Chelsea player. N'Golo Kanté.
Yep.
There's a lot of talk about Conte winning the Ballon d'Or before the Euro tournament, right after Chelsea won the Champions League, right? Like you said, last year he finished in what, third?
Yeah, third last year.
Yeah, he finished in third last year, and they were like, oh, this is Conte's year. And Conte's kind of strange. I'll say why.
Strange as a player, not as a person.
No, listen, a great person, and he's not strange as a player. He's honestly one of the best players, one of the best midfielders, in my opinion, in the world. But the reason it's strange is because this is a guy that what he does on the field, you can't measure up statistically. You know, when these guys look at stats to say, what did Conte really do? The stats almost lie about what he does on the field. So I dove a little bit deeper to try and find what it is that, you know, on paper could show that he excels. And he had 30 appearances. So injuries were not a struggle for him. This is in the Premier League. He had 30 appearances. He was there. He had 0 goals, though, and he had 2 assists. He was part of, when he was on the pitch, they won 17 games, they lost 5. Chelsea only won 2 games without him. So that means he's an integral part of when they're winning.
Right.
Okay? When he didn't play, they lost 4 without him. It goes to show you what Conte does. Getting into the statistics, okay? He completed 1,529 passes over the course of the season.
Incredible.
And he had 69 accurate long balls. So the long balls, the way that they take those in statistically, is any pass over 30 yards.
Yes.
Which is huge. But even as great of a passer as he is, that's not where he shines. This guy is a disruptor. This is the guy in the middle of the field pressuring you, chasing you down, intercepting balls, tackling balls for wins. So these are the statistics I was able to find on him, okay? He had, in the Premier League, 79 tackles, 59 interceptions, 194 recoveries. So that means when there was a loose ball around him, he was recovering it.
Exactly.
Right. And then 129 duels won. So that means if a guy was trying to take him on one-on-one, guess what, buddy? You're not coming out of that duel with a ball. Conte's coming out of it with the ball at his feet. So that's where this player is incredible to me. Now, another fun stat. He made no errors that led to a goal.
Really?
Correct. For the entire Premier League season, no errors that led to a goal. And with a midfielder who's touching the ball that much and passing the ball that much, how easy could it be to misplace one of your passes and get counterattacked and it leads to a goal? That doesn't happen to Conte. No,
it doesn't.
He's just smart.
That's insane.
That was Conte in the Premier League. We're moving on to the Champions League, okay? Obviously, Chelsea, Champions League winners. He played in 13 matches. 362 pass completions on 419 attempts, so he's working at about 86%. Again, the difference is the dirty work. 16 interceptions, 17 tackles for win of possession, and 89 loose balls recovered.
It's insane.
It's absolutely insane what this guy does. This is where Conte loses it for me this year, though. He's playing for France in the Euro Cup. The team that has won the last World Cup, 2018 World Cup, France were champions, okay?
Yep.
He played 4 matches with France in the Euro. He had 0 goals. He did have, once again, a 91% pass completion rating, completed 232 passes out of 253, 11 interceptions, 8 tackles won, and 42 loose balls recovered. Guess what that got him in the Euro?
A squat.
The 109th best overall player in the tournament. And some people could argue, well, you know, he only got to play 4 games. Yeah, but
Listen, you have four games to do your job. That's it.
He played well, but could he have done more? In my opinion, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as phenomenal as a player that he is, and as great of a season that he had for Chelsea, I'm going to take him out of contention for winning it. He's going to get nominated.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm taking it out of contention for winning it.
He made my top five.
But the problem is, again now, the writers, they love the Premier League players.
Right.
They just love them. So Conte's probably going to get more recognition than he should because he's a Chelsea player, right?
So, I mean, if you take away the Euro Cup, his numbers are phenomenal. And that alone should get him top three.
Right.
You know, but the top two guys, Lewandowski and Messi, those are some hard-hitting players.
Right, absolutely. But now we're going to go to the next player. You just mentioned him, Lewandowski, right? Lewandowski played for Bayern Munich. They won the league. 41 goals, 7 assists, and he did all of this in 29 matches. Won the Golden Boot. Here's my problem. Bayern has a great team. You're scoring all these goals. They exited the Champions League in the quarterfinals. Okay? He had 5 goals in the Champions League. Maybe he should save some of his scoring power for tournaments that actually matter. I don't care if Bayern Munich wins another Bundesliga. Woohoo! Nobody cares. It's expected at this point. Go out and win something different. And he couldn't. They failed in the Champions League. And I think out of his 5 goals, maybe 3 of them were on penalties or something 8. Along those lines.
8.
No, you're talking about the league.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm talking
yeah.
about Champions League.
Okay.
Then, in the Euro Cup, and granted, Poland's not that great of a team. They're good, but they're not that good.
Right, right. It's tough when you only have one or two guys that can really pull the weight.
I wouldn't say one or two. I think they have a good squad.
No, when I mean pull their weight, I mean like this guy. You know what I mean? You need to have guys that are either up to his stature or 75% to him to compete against teams like France and Germany and, you know.
Yeah, but that argument goes out the window after what we saw in this Euro Cup because a Switzerland was able to beat a France. Denmark made it to the semis, taking out some big teams on the way.
Denmark made it to the semis on pure heart.
And I'm with you, but what I'm saying is Poland could be one of those teams, especially with a player of Lewandowski's caliber.
Right.
However, Lewandowski only scored 3 goals through 3 games in the group stages. Once again, if you could score 41 in 29 games in the Bundesliga, something seems wrong to me that you're only scoring 3 goals in 3 games.
Is it the fact that the keepers or the defenses he's going against in the Bundesliga are not at par with the teams that he's going against in the tournament?
No, I don't think that's what it is. I think what it is that Bayern Munich is such a good team that they make Lewandowski look good. Does that make sense?
It does.
So
I guess we'll find out because, you know, there's been some rumors. So if he does leave, we'll find out if your theory is correct.
Right. We'll see what happens. But so, listen, he excelled in the Bundesliga. That's great. He didn't do squat in the Champions League. He didn't do squat in the Euro Cup for me. So I'm putting him as the number 3 on my list. That's where I have him. Great player. Probably, I will admit, best striker in the world currently.
For his age.
Yeah. He's 32. So yeah. That's huge.
Yeah.
I don't see him winning the Ballon d'Or. That's what it comes down to. And then next, I got to bring him up. And it bothers me because he's probably the guy who's going to win it. But it's Messi. Okay?
But why does it bother you?
It bothers me because Messi has won the Ballon d'Or when Barcelona...
7 times.
Yeah, but when Barcelona has won the La Liga, the Champions League, the Copa del Rey, and he's done amazing things with Argentina. And it's almost like, guess what, Messi? I'm now putting you against what your former self did. And I'm not happy with what you did this season. I'll break down into it a little bit. So Barcelona came in 3rd this year, okay? He played in 35 matches. He scored 30 goals, had 9 assists, which is good. That's a great season. That's a phenomenal season, actually. Right. Okay? He won a Copa del Rey, which, like I said, I feel like domestic cups hold less weight, in my opinion. But still, you won a cup. You won a Copa del Rey. In 5 matches played, he had 3 goals and 1 assist. Good numbers. In Champions League, though, once again, they got knocked out in the round of 16 by PSG.
Right, but you got to understand what PSG's firepower is compared to Barcelona's firepower. It's a lot less.
We're talking about the PSG, who a few years back went up 4-0 on Barcelona. And then when they went to Spain, Barcelona came back and annihilated
them. Who was on that Barcelona team?
I mean, who are we missing now? Suarez? The team is still there. Messi is that team, first of all.
Anyways, we're going to digress into a 45-minute debate.
But so, in the Champions League, 5 goals and 2 assists. Again, for getting knocked out in the round of 16, that's pretty good. Copa America, okay? Solid once again. 7 matches played. 4 goals, 5 assists, and they're the champions. They won it. But out of those 4 goals he scored, three of them came off of penalty kicks.
Like actual penalty kicks or
free actual kicks? Penalty okay. kicks? Actual penalty kicks.
Here's my argument with you on that one.
Okay.
4 goals, 5 assists. It's the 5 assists to me that make it a special thing.
But it's no lie that he's a team player. We've always known that about Absolutely. Messi. He's
and the
a team
other
player.
Thing, too, is that he wins his first championship for Argentina.
And that's fine. I'm okay with that. But I don't think he should get the Ballon d'Or just based off of the fact that he won with Argentina.
I don't think so either. I want Lewandowski to win it.
Right.
You know, but I think that's what they're going to look at. That's what the journalists are going to look at. That's what these people that are voting are going to look at. Is, he finally won his first championship with Argentina. You know, he's at that age. We just give it to him. He's going to retire soon anyways.
But then wait until you hear about this 29-year-old player in the season that he just had, all right? My pick to win the Ballon d'Or is Jorginho. Played with Chelsea, won the Champions League, came in 4th place in the Premier League. I believe they made it to the final or the semifinal. One of those. In the Shield Cup that they do over in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's
a preseason. The FA Shield, right?
Yeah, it's a preseason.
Won the Euros. Did I mention that?
Yeah.
Just make sure I want to reiterate it. He won the Euros.
Right.
With Italy.
Right.
A team that came into this tournament ranked 7th.
And mind you, he played that final game all sorts of banged up.
Correct. This is where Jorginho shined this past season. All right? In the EPL, 28 appearances, 7 goals and 1 assist. Now, this is a midfielder that, to me, he's not there to score goals.
No, he's there to create
the chances to score goals. So the fact that he had 7 goals is already huge within itself. All right. He was on the field. When he played, Chelsea had 16 wins. He was on the field for 5 losses. Chelsea won 3 without him. So similar to Conte, Chelsea only won 2 without him. But then they lost 4 without Jorginho on the field. So he's a big part of that team once again. Now, we were getting wide-eyed over Conte's numbers. Jorginho completed 1,783 passes in the Premier League. That's an average of 64 passes per game.
You know what that means, right? For those that are listening, that means they go specifically through him.
That's the beauty of Jorginho.
Right.
Jorginho is the metronome of any team that he plays on.
Right.
And I had the luxury of being able to watch him every Sunday when he was on Napoli. The guy is phenomenal. The way he controls the game. He's a maestro. I encourage all of you to go watch highlights of Jorginho. Even when he does not have the ball at his foot, he is pointing, talking, and directing his teammates where to go and what to do. The guy is just a genius when he's on the field. And that's why he's so valuable in the midfield. He just knows how to dictate play and move the ball around. I love the guy. But anyway.
And he's a winger. Imagine it.
What are you talking about?
Sorry.
Come back to us. He's a defensive midfielder.
Right.
So, he did that in the Premier League. This is a fun little stat.
Do you have a stat there for 40-plus yard passes?
I have the 30-plus yard. The long balls, because they judge him on 30.
How accurate?
I'll get there in a second. This one's actually funny. Guess what his cross accuracy was in the Premier League season?
87%.
100%.
Wow.
100% cross accuracy. But this is a flawed stat because he only crossed the ball 3 times all season.
Oh, yeah.
So he had 3 completed crosses. But it's just funny because he's a central player. He doesn't get outside that often. So the times he did get outside, he was still helpful in getting that, serving that ball into where it needed to go.
Later on in the second half, I have a guy I'm going to bring up that's got some phenomenal numbers as a defender.
We'll bring him up in the second half then. But you were asking about the long balls. 76 accurate long balls.
Wow.
More than Conte.
Wow.
Okay. And you know how we were talking about Conte being a disruptor and, you know, winning all those loose balls and the interceptions? Jorginho does the same thing. If you look up those numbers, I don't have them right now off the top of my head, but if you look at those numbers for Jorginho in the defensive side of the field, he does almost exactly what Conte does. We're missing a like maybe minus five there, you know? But he does almost everything exactly the same. The only place that Jorginho loses to Conte is the...
winning those balls.
The what?
Winning the balls.
No. I told you, the recovering the loose balls, he does that. It's the challenges. Okay, so if you challenge Jorginho instead of challenging Conte, like I said before, Conte's coming out with the ball.
Right.
Jorginho is going to get beat more often.
Right, okay.
That's the statistic that Conte wins over Jorginho. But anyway, we said he was at 76 accurate long balls. Now we get into Champions League. In Champions League, he played 12 matches. So once again, injury is not a concern for this guy. He's consistent. He's there. He shows up to play. In Champions League, he had one goal and one assist. He completed 658 passes on 735 attempts. That's an 89.5% completion rating. Better than Conte.
Say that one more time.
600.
You know, it didn't register the first time.
Oh, yeah. I'll gladly say it again. 658 passes on 735 attempts. That's an 89.5% completion.
Unreal.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the best in the world at what he does.
Now,
I said in the Premier League, which obviously they play more games, right? He had 76 accurate long balls. Remember, guys, this is a pass over 30 yards. Getting it to your teammate. Putting it right in front of them on their feet. He had 76 of them in the Premier League. How many of them do you think he had in the Champions League?
I don't know. 56?
84, Ant.
And that's less games.
Less games, and he had 84. Okay? Wow.
Yeah, this guy should win hands down.
Then listen to this. Now, fourth place with Chelsea in the Premier League, wins the Champions League, and he's a huge, huge part,
right,
you know, of both of those things, as we saw with how many appearances he made. He comes to the Euros, playing for Italy, team that's not going to do much. Nobody thought that seventh-ranked Italy was going to make it far in this tournament. Well, the team isn't there. They're inexperienced players, blah, 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 whatever. Jorginho goes, hold my beer. Steps onto the field, okay? Easily one of our best players on Italy. But again, these are the type of players that do the dirty work that isn't as eye-popping.
Right.
So people don't realize it right away. He had 94% completion rating when it came to passing in the Euro. 487 passes completed on 518 attempts. 29 of them were long balls, okay? He played in all seven matches. Remember, Italy did a complete turnover for their game against Wales, but not Jorginho. And the reason that they didn't sit Jorginho is because the team cannot operate without
him.
He is that good. He is that solid, and he makes the difference. So that goes to show me, you can surround Jorginho with anybody, okay? I'm going to use a football comparison for some of our new listeners who don't get it that much. Jorginho is Tom Brady. Tom Brady can make any receiver look good. Jorginho can make anybody else on the field look good.
Right.
That's what I like about the guy. Jorginho finished as the sixth overall player in the Euro tournament.
Which is crazy. Who was number one, did they say?
Once again, we'll check after the break. Don't remember right off the top of my head. We're going to take a little anchor break. Then we'll come back. We'll start talking about our EPL predictions.
Sounds good to me.
All right. And we're back. I've done enough talking for the last 40 minutes, so I'm going to say two quick things that Ant asked about, and then I'm going to let him take it over with the Premier League predictions. So, Marco Verratti finished as the number one overall player for the Euro Cup, and Lewandowski, when you asked about him, finished at 74th overall.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, Ant, take it away with the Premier League predictions.
So listen, we're going to get into predictions. I know it's early. We still got literally 32 days before the transfer window is closed.
Correct.
So anything can happen. I put my five teams together. I'm going to give you four. And then on my last one, I'm going to tell you why I think they're going to win.
Go ahead, man.
It's even crazier.
I'm just telling you, you caught some flack for putting Napoli winning the Serie A.
I'm glad. Okay? I'm glad. But I still think Napoli's going to win a Serie A.
You're either absolutely crazy or everybody should be taking your word and going to bet on the teams you're claiming to win.
I'm a time traveler. I've seen it.
Listen, if that's the case, everybody go to Vegas right now, put in on a bet, whatever Ant is going to say to win first.
I saw it on episodes of The Simpsons.
It's Leicester all over again in your head. All right, go ahead. Take it away.
All right. Like I said, it's early, but things can change with transfers and everything else that happens.
Okay.
But my number five, I have Liverpool.
Interesting.
My number four, ready? Manchester United.
Okay.
My number three, I have Chelsea.
Okay.
My number two, heads are going to explode now, Manchester City.
Okay.
My number one is Arsenal.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. All right.
Two reasons I picked Arsenal.
First of all, I feel like we should just end this podcast now for you picking Arsenal to win. Are you serious? Arsenal.
Maybe.
The one team that's historically known to shoot themselves in the foot every time they do anything, try to do anything important.
I'm telling you, when I talked to Josh this week, he had that look. When he told me that he thinks Arsenal's going to come in third place, he had that look like there was that glimmer of hope. So I took that glimmer of hope and turned it into...
Listen, right, man, crazier things have happened in the Premier League. Like I said, Leicester won it in the 15-16 season. Nobody expected that, but...
So I think what really caught my eye is this signing that they made. Ben White, 23 years old, center back. His numbers are through the roof. Unbelievable. And I think he's going to be the key to all of it.
Okay.
Okay? He's one of the most accurate back-to-front passing center backs in the Premier League at 23 years old.
So he's a young Bonucci.
Young. It might end up being better.
Okay.
40% of his passes go forward. He had the most passes behind Harry Maguire that landed in the final third. He had 358 while Maguire had 370.
And I remember when the Maguire signing happened, a lot of people were like, are you serious? That much money for Maguire?
Right.
So this kid even ends up being half of what Maguire is.
And not only can he do that, he can also carry the ball with purpose. He's had 24 successful dribbles when opponents drop off. That's pretty huge for
center a center back. Yeah.
Okay. Had the most carries with a take on with 18 dribbles with somebody trying to take the ball away from him as a center back. Now, I'm going to butcher this name. Adriboyo had 11. So he had the most next to him as with most carries with the take on. And then he had the most interceptions by a center defender next to Bednar, who had 84. He had 62, and then there was nobody that came close to either one of those two guys. So I think this is what's going to make the difference. This defender, this young kid who shows that he can do the things that they need him to do.
And Ben White, you said he's coming over from what, Brighton?
Brighton, yep.
I mean, listen, Arsenal's got a squad. It's not like they don't.
Yeah.
But do you really think he's going to play over Gabriel, Holding, Chambers, guys that have already been there?
I believe he was brought on because he's replacing Luis.
Okay. That,
so.
I mean, look, they paid a hefty amount for him, but I don't know. I mean, he's coming over from Brighton. Listen, it could work. I'm not saying it can't, but I would not put my faith in this one kid to win them a Premier League
title. And I'm telling you, I have notes for every team that I listed. But for some reason, this kid just caught my attention as a center back. You know, he just, the things that he could do. He's 23 years old. You know, he's a young kid. Now, things could be different. If Manchester City lands Grealish, Kane, Lewandowski, these are all rumors, right?
Yeah, that's fantasy land, though.
Griezmann, all rumors. Then forget it. They're obviously going to run away with the whole thing. But like I said, these are all rumors.
I don't know. I mean, if Arsenal is going to make a run, I don't see it because of them being strong defensively. If anything, it's going to be because of what they have up top.
But they need a strong defense to stop those goal scorers.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't see it in the cards for them. I mean, listen, that's your prediction. You're entitled to it, but...
I know. I'm crazy.
Let's also not forget, Arsenal went out last, two seasons ago, and they bought Nicolas Pepe for, what was it, like... over 80 mil. This kid was supposed to be the next best player, and Napoli was interested in him, actually. And they're like, no, you're crazy. We're not spending that much money on this guy. Goes to Arsenal. Done nothing.
Right.
So whoever's evaluating talent at Arsenal.
We know this kid proved himself at Brighton.
Yeah,
so listen. He's playing against his same peers. It's not like he's going to a different league completely. But so that's what that's why.
It's not
I have
that
faith
he's not a. It's not that I don't see him as a good player. It's just how's he going to fit into Arsenal's system? That's the only thing.
Well, the good thing is he's 23 years old, so he's gonna they're gonna be able to mold him into however they want him to. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, that's if
we'll see. We'll see how big of a dumpster fire I just caused. But if they win, we'll celebrate with a bottle of like apple cider champagne or something like that. I'm cheap.
Dude, I'm just shocked. I don't even like I forgot what I was even thinking because you said Arsenal.
I'm glad I got to blow your mind on that one.
Yeah.
I told you last night I was going to blow your mind.
Listen, I like I said, I like their midfield. I like what they got up top with a Aubameyang. They got Saka, obviously. Pepe might find his way into his own. We don't know. Willian, older, but still good.
Saka scored his first goal for them yesterday in a friendly. And like we talked about, his speed is what...
It's a difference
it's
maker.
It's unbelievable.
Right. He's what Pepe was supposed to be, but obviously Pepe didn't develop that way. I'm not sure if Torreira is still there. He might have left. He might have gone somewhere else, but I have to check that. Listen, Arsenal to me, they're a team that'll finish in the top 10. I don't see them coming into the top 5, though. This is what I got. And instead of going crazy like the way I did with my Serie A predictions, because obviously being a Napoli fan, I'm going to put Napoli higher. It's a terrible bias, but it is what it is. I got Tottenham finishing in 5th.
Even if they get rid of Kane?
I'm going based off of what they have right now.
Right now.
And as of right now, they
yeah, like have we Kane. Said, it's still early and anything can happen.
They still have Kane.
Right.
They still have Dele Alli. They still have Son. Okay? And look.
Son, who I love, he's phenomenal.
He's one of the best players out there. They just signed another winger, Brian Gill. We'll see what he's capable of doing. But they got a team. They got a team that can compete. And I think I'm forgetting Bale. Bale's on top.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So I think they could finish 5th. Maybe fight for 4th, but I see them finishing 5th. I think the team's there for them to be able to do that. And let's not forget, Tottenham is a team that, what was it, 2 years ago was in a Champions League final?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 2-3 seasons ago. It's not too far removed. They still got a majority of those players.
Who's the new manager over there? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Tottenham's manager is Nuno Santo.
Okay.
So listen, I think he's going to do good things for them. We'll just see how it ends up working out. Maybe he could find a way to propel him to win the whole thing, and maybe he could completely tank him. We don't know.
Right.
But that's who I have at 5th.
That was your 5th, wasn't it?
Tottenham's my 5th.
Yeah.
Going at 4th, I put Manchester United.
Okay, so that's where mine was.
Yeah. Listen, I like Manchester United, and I actually struggled with them back and forth because, to me, Manchester United is a team that can win the whole thing, but I don't know how the pressure of Champions League is going to get to them. I have them dropping off 2 places, but dropping off 2 places and seeing them get better as a squad. I see them making a further run in Champions League, and for years to come, I see them winning a title, probably within the next 3 to 4 years.
Especially with Jadon Sancho coming there.
And I was just going to say.
You see his numbers from Bundesliga, 38 goals.
Again, different type of league, like we were talking about Lewandowski earlier. But I think Jadon Sancho is the guy that they needed for the future. All right?
Fun fact about him.
Go ahead.
Since 2018, he's produced more assists than any other Premier League player with 41. So while he was there, I mean, like you said, different league, but still. It's hard to do.
And the kid's young, man. Yeah. That's the beauty about him.
Yeah.
But let's not forget, Manchester City always also has Edinson Cavani.
Yeah, I know.
Okay? All this hype about Haaland right now, right? And how good he is and what he does. People are... Cavani never got the credit that he deserved because I feel like Cavani did that back when he was in his early 20s. Right. He started off at Palermo and came to Napoli afterwards, exploded at Napoli, went to PSG, now finds himself at Manchester United. And even at 34 years old, this guy's still a beast.
Yeah.
Okay?
Absolutely.
It's huge that they still have Cavani on that squad. I like him.
And Anthony, don't forget about Varane. They just picked up Rafael Varane, too.
Did they?
Yeah.
I didn't see it be official yet. No. That we're going to have to double check on. Yeah, that's not official yet.
That's not?
It is not official
yet. What are they waiting for now? Just personal terms?
It could be. According to my sources, though, as of right now, it's not yet official. I could be completely wrong, but goalkeeping, obviously, they don't have an issue with that. Their defense with Maguire is pretty much taken care of. You know, their outside backs with Shaw and Bailey, I'm not concerned about their defense at all. their midfield. Come on. They got one of the best midfielders in the world in Paul Pogba. So,
oh, yeah.
Jesse Lingard, we can't forget about him. They got Juan Mata. Just acquired, I'm pretty sure, Andreas Pereira from Lazio. And they still have Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial. Man United is stacked, man. I see them doing good things in the future. For this year, though, I'm going to have them fourth. Like I said, they're going to be focusing a little bit more on that Champions League run. Third, I put Liverpool. Listen, Liverpool didn't really lose anybody. They didn't really acquire anybody. I think the magic in that team, you know, that ended up winning the Champions League is disappeared a little bit. They're still solid. They're one of the best teams in England, but I don't think it's going to be enough for them to compete for first place. I think they're going to finish a solid third, make a solid run in Champions League. Good team, fun team to watch, but they're not going to win anything this year. Moving up to second, I put Chelsea.
Okay.
Listen, they're just coming off a Champions League win. They're going to be competing hard. Same thing. I don't believe they got rid of any major pieces. The team pretty much, for the most part, stayed the same. Yeah, the guys that they got rid of, Olivier Giroud, went to AC Milan. But I think they can function without him. You know, Pulisic, Timo Werner, Tammy Abraham. They got Havertz, Mount. And on defense, they still have Azpilicueta. They still have Chilwell. Emerson's still there at the moment. Mzaga. Listen, this team is going to be just fine. And in goal, we're going to see what happens. But between Mendy and Kepa, they're in good hands.
Right.
So I'm honestly okay with Chelsea finishing in second. They might push for that first place spot. I don't see it happening. First overall, obviously.
Can I guess?
Who?
West Ham.
West all the way.
See? I'm good.
No, like I said, I'm staying true to the stats. I'm going with Man City. Man City has the team. Man City has spent the most amount of money out of any other team in the past 5 years in that Premier League.
Right.
It's theirs to lose. They have one of the best coaches in the world. They have some of the best players in the world. It's not even a question for me of can they win it. It's theirs to lose. That's the way I'm looking at it.
But like I said before, transfer window isn't closed yet. You got guys like Grealish, Kane that can come over there, and guys like Silva and Sterling that could leave. Time will tell.
For me, I just see it as one of those things where their team is pretty much set. They don't need to acquire anybody else. They just need to make sure they don't lose anybody. And that's pretty much it.
All right.
So that's what I got for my Premier League predictions.
So I guess that's it. We'll see everybody on the next one. But before we cut off, I want to give a special happy birthday to our guy Sam out there. Continue to smile and make everybody laugh, because it doesn't matter how bad of a day you're having, this kid will brighten it up. So happy birthday, Sam.
Happy birthday, Sam.
From Anthony and Antonio, we'll see you guys next time. See you later.
Later.